Idly hey.
Welcome to another episode of The Brett Allen Show.
Prepare to be astonished.
A pop culture podcast. Join Brett weekly as he interviews your favorite celebrities from film, television,
I'm back in business, baby!
Comedy, and much more.
Inconceivable!
Plus, you never know who will stop by.
Dude, we are so gonna party!
Now, here is your host, Brett Allen.
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of The Brett Allen Show, a pop culture podcast where we interview your favorite actors from film and television, comedy, music, and more. And today, we have a very special guest. We are chatting with Max Casella. I mean, I don't even know where to start. Well, let's start with your current project, That Cold Dead Look in Your Eyes. Max, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yes. Well, I'm joking partially in the fact that you have such a large body of work, but let's talk about this film. I had the opportunity to watch it. Amazing and beautiful film. Very unexpected, to say the least. And yeah, just incredible. Let's talk about this project and how this all sort of came about for you and how you got involved with it.
Well, owner Tukel has been a friend of mine for a long time. I met him when he made a film called Applesauce, and he asked me to be in that. And I just fell in love with the guy. I mean, he's such a great artist, such a unique voice in a sort of world where everything sort of, you know, fades into the woodwork as the same old. Owner's got a true unique person. And when he was doing this movie, he had already been filming it, and sort of as an afterthought, because we were friends, he said, I have a small part I wrote for you. Would you like to do it? And of course, and with anything with owner, whenever he asked me to do anything, I just say yes without even looking at it. Because I love the guy. He's a dear friend of mine, and I trust his artistic vision implicitly. And originally he was like, can you speak French? I said, no. I said, but I guess I could, you know, learn how to say my lines in French. So we talked about that for a little while, then quickly realized that was sort of an impossibility in such a short period of time because there was too much dialogue. But yeah, I've seen the movie. I think it's brilliant. I think it's one of his best. It's gorgeously shot, beautifully acted. The music is fantastic. And it's perfectly weird and perfectly owner.
Yeah, I'll have to be honest with you. I mean, again, the film is beautiful and amazing, but as I said in our introduction, very unexpected. Like I did not see any of this coming, so to speak. And I think that's great, yeah. To say the least. And you already answered my next question about speaking French, because when the film starts out, clearly French is the primary language. I think they sprinkle English in and out partially throughout the film. And of course, you know, you say a few lines here and there in Spanish. So obviously this was a bit of a departure for you as far as learning like the language, but it turned out perfectly well. And I think when audiences have the opportunity to watch this, I think they're going to be amazed at just how well it's done. And you said the music, the scenery, the cinematography is all, it's spectacular, honestly. Like I'm breathtaking just even discussing it now after watching.
I agree. I think it's one of his best. And it's creepy as hell. And it's owner's peculiar artistic view of the world. And sometimes it takes strange twists and turns. But you just got to go with him because you're in good hands. You know, he's not a Hollywood director, and he's a real artist, and he's like got a very unique voice, you know, and things take unexpected turns with owner, and you just got to go with it.
As an actor, when you've done so many things and so many major projects, when you have the opportunity to do something like this, that might be a departure from what you normally done. And that might even be a stretch to say that, because you've just, as I was researching and found out about our conversation, I was going back through your entire body of work. And I mean, you've done a lot. Some I've even had forgotten about, you know, even in the last 10 years. Do you find yourself challenged as an actor when you have an opportunity to be able to do something like this that's so different and so unique to what roles you might typically play?
No, I mean, I treat it like anything else. It wasn't a challenge at all. I mean, I knew what the role was, and I don't want to say it's just an acting job, because it sounds like it just didn't like matter as far as anything compared to anything else. But it really, no, I mean, for me, it was a chance to work with my friends, and I read the part and I got it immediately. Guy runs a restaurant, and this one chef is getting very weird, and he starts to like forgets how to cook. He starts poisoning the customers accidentally, and something weird is happening to him, which you find out in the movie what that thing is, and it's very weird. And then I have to like demote him and make him a waiter. Then he can't seem to do that. I mean, it was like very simple stuff, you know. And I was just basically just was Max is if Max was running a French restaurant in New York. I mean, it was just a joy to do it. I mean, I don't see, there are some roles that are take a lot more research, or they have their other challenges, but mostly acting is something it just comes naturally to me. And I just have a feel for it. I've been doing it since I was a tiny kid playing make-believe. And, you know, I just never grew up and stopped playing make-believe. I never got a real job.
I love the honesty. It's great because you have done so much going. I mean, I think all the way back, I mean, obviously a lot of people would connect you with Doogie Howser, but you've also gone on to do so many other amazing projects. I mean, you know, I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. Miss Maisel, Sopranos. I mean, when I was going back and researching and just kind of looking at your body of work, I was like, you have been doing this for a very long time. What was it that interested you in acting to begin with? Because you did get a start at such a very young age, you know, into the business.
Yeah, no, I started acting when I was about 12 in Boston, where I grew up. And I kind of just fell into it. And I mean, before that, since I was a little kid, I was an illustrator. And I was drawing all the time, but I never considered that a career. I wasn't even thinking in terms of a career because I was just a little kid. And then a drama coordinator for the city of Cambridge, where all the public schools would come around and play theater games with us. And then she asked me to be in a high school play. And I think the first time I was on stage was in this high school play, even though I was only 12, I was in grammar school. It was a production of Pippin, the musical, and they needed a little boy to play Theo. And I think the minute I got on stage, I just had one of those feelings of like, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm not sure I could be honest in telling you what that feeling was. And maybe it was just a matter of being an egomaniac, attention whore kid. maybe that was all it was. I mean, I still love my art and my drawing and stuff, but it's very solitary. I guess acting allowed me to have like sort of things in my personality, which is sort of tug of war between me wanting to be an introvert and me wanting to be an extrovert. And so acting allows me to act out all of my extroversions in a sort of safe way, because it's just, we're playing make-believe.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. I had heard different stories from other actors who have been a part of some of these major projects recently, the Sopranos prequel, The Many Saints. And a lot of these actors were very young, working with very seasoned actors who were in this film. And they were always asking, you know, do you have any advice or anything that you can help me with? And I think Ray Liotta said the same thing that you just said, almost exactly. It's like, we have the best job in the world. We get to put on some makeup, throw some gel in our hair, memorize a few lines, and we get to play for a living. This is not a normal job that anybody else in the world could ever possibly have. So enjoy it, because, you know, you have nowhere to go but up from here. When you are acting and you get this project, Doogie Howser, and I just want to touch on it lightly, just in light of the fact that they have are doing a retelling now of the story because it was just so good originally. I don't think you could ever do the original justice. That's just my personal opinion because it was such a fun show growing up watching it. But when you land on a show like that and you're a part of this major project, how does it feel as an individual to get something like this and go, man, this thing is huge and it's just so well received by, because there was nothing like it at the time. No show on television that was telling quite the story that you were telling. And it wasn't just about a young kid being a doctor. You guys had an amazing relationship and you guys dealt with real problems, you know, that answered a lot of questions.
Well, I got to tell you, the truth of the matter is a little bit stranger than maybe you'd expect. I think when I got Doogie Howser, I was living in New York with my mom up in Inwood, 207th Street. We were broke as anything. She was basically supporting me. I was like 20, 21. I was going to acting class. I was working in a theater, an off Broadway theater. I was cleaning the toilets and mopping the floors, painting the walls. I was running the light board and I was in the plays and I was having an apprenticeship there and was happy as anything. I had just come back from London the previous summer to study Shakespeare. The only reason I was able to afford the summer Shakespeare intensive, which cost $2,000 in 1987, was because my mother had fallen in a pothole and my uncle sued the city. And I was able to go with the money. And I was all set to go back the summer of 1989, which is really what I wanted. I wanted to be an artist and a theater actor, and I loved Shakespeare. And I had all these highfalutin ideas, with all of which I still have, by the way, and have gotten to like realize those over the years. But at the time when I was 20, 21, I had no intention of looking at Hollywood or television or anything. But while I was working as an apprentice in this theater, it was called Theater 22 on 54 West 22nd Street, run by this old, brilliant old man, Sidney Armis, who was a old friend of Marlon Brando's from like the 40s and 50s. And a lot of agents would come through there scouting talent at the acting classes that would be going on in the daytime. And they'd see me mopping the floors. And I got to tell you, so many agents just spotted me immediately and said, I want to represent you. Are you an actor? And so I was freelancing with about five of them. And they were just like, I had hardly had to raise an eyebrow. And they would just see me and they go, I want to represent you. It was really weird. And I was insanely lucky and ignorant at the same time. And I was auditioning for all these pilots. And one of them was Doogie Howser. And I booked it. Now, when I booked it, it had totally fucked my plans of going back to the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts for the second time year, which was like my happiest time I'd ever been in my life. I had no plans to do anything in Hollywood. I was still like in the training phase. I was just studying all night and working on my speech in the mirror every night. And I was just like living this monkish experience. And I get this pilot and it's I don't even realize how lucky it is because it's not just a pilot. It's a Stephen Bochco pilot. It's guaranteed 13 episodes on the air. It's like actors go their whole careers wanting this. And it just here it is. I just get it right out of the gate. And I'm telling my friends, I'm like, yeah, there's some Stephen Bochco. They're like, Stephen Bochco, you know what? And I go out, I do the pilot. And we're so broke at this time. We're like, me and my mom be counting out pennies to get on the subway to go to work, to buy a token. And all of a sudden, and it takes me like 2 years to save up $2,000 to go back to London Academy, where I wanted to go the second year. Boom, I got $10,000 dropped in my lap like that.
Wow.
And your head is just spinning. So I go out and I do the pilot. I'm in LA for the first time. I'm having a ball. I finally moved me and my mom out of Inwood down into the West Village. I'm thinking I'm there for do 13 episodes, which is about 3 months. And then I'm back in New York, but with a ton of money. Well, it went 4 years But I was like dumb luck.
An overnight success that's taken years to get where you're at. It's unbelievable. It doesn't happen that way at all.
But I wasn't looking at it. I wasn't looking, trying it for it. I wasn't trying. I didn't even want it. And when I first got it, I was crestfallen, if you can believe it. Because I had no, I was only 21 and hadn't been anywhere and didn't know anything.
Wow, that is so fascinating. I think that's why I love doing this podcast, Max, is because I get to talk to such talented actors and amazing people like yourself and hear these things. Because I remember watching this show and nobody would ever have that idea. And it just went on forever. And yes, Bochco, that's a name. I haven't heard that in quite some time. To get a show like that, because he was pumping out the hits. My goodness. It was just one after another after another. Yeah. Kind of like a Dick Wolf before his time, you know, right. Who now has like a bajillion, that's hyperbole, but all these shows on television,
yeah.
You know, because they do so well. And again, you've been a part of so many other amazing things. Mrs. Maisel, of course, The Sopranos. I mean, the list goes on and on. One last question, Max, as we wrap our conversation here. You've done so many things and been a part of so many projects. Was there ever a piece of advice that you were given at some point in your career that just helped you and sustained you and kind of kept you moving along, maybe even early on in your career when you just kept landing, you know, all of these successes, just one right after the other?
I think the only thing that comes to mind is a piece of advice that wasn't given me, but given to my friend while I was standing right next to him. So I heard it. And I got to be honest, I didn't follow the advice or digest it for many years after, but it stayed with me. And he told my friend, who was also an actor, he was a producer, this guy Phil Goldfarb, he was a producer on Doogie Howser. And he said to my friend, make sure you are your true self at all times, and don't copy other actors, and don't put on a phony facade, because if we, the producers, are actually looking for someone just like you, we may miss you. Because you're out there pretending to be somebody else, somebody big, famous movie star guy that you're trying to copy. A lot of actors do that. We all copied when we were kids. We're all encouraged, actually, in one way or another by our acting teachers. Even if they didn't say that, it was sort of in the air. Like, you should look at Brando, and look at this one, and look at, you know, Dustin Hoffman, Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, all the names, big names that when I was coming up, you know, and you internalize like, yes, I am trash basically, and they are gods, and I can never hope to be that. So I have to like, try to like copy that. You haven't internalized what made them great, which was their unique individuality. And it takes years of, life, it's called maturity. And I've reached the age where I am now totally myself. Be damned if I'm not as great or as famous or as brilliant as, say, you know, Robert De Niro or somebody, anybody else like that. By God, I'm my fucking self. And I'm the best Max Casella there is. You know, it's that old letter from Martha Graham to, I think, one of her students, as she says something, there's that letter about, you know, it's not for you to decide how good you are. You have to be you no matter what. You know, it's not your business to be satisfied. No artist is ever satisfied. So I'll leave it at that.
Wow. And we have been talking with Max Casella. That cold, dead look in your eyes. Be on the lookout for this. It will be available for people to stream soon. This is an amazing film. I'm so lucky I had the chance to watch it twice. Max Casella, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it. It's been an honor.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Anytime.
That brings today's show to a close.
Doodly-do.
Thanks for stopping by. If you enjoyed the episode, feel free to share it with a friend and subscribe. It's absolutely free. The views and opinions of the guests do not necessarily reflect those of the host.
Autobots, roll out.
Go home.